another day, another dollar makes you wonder where your money went. You can scream and you can holler. It really does.
Hello, this is Jack Spirko with another edition of the Survival Podcast. One man's view of the changing world and changing economic times, the things we can do to live a better life if times get tough, or even if they don't. Today's show is going to be kind of an add-on to the show I just tried last week. I'm not going to go around the net again and talk about a bunch of different blogs, but one of the topics that came up when I did that on Friday was that the world could, in spite of all the global warming alarmists, actually be going into a cooling cycle either already or very, very soon, depending on whose numbers you look at. And I did a little more research, and there's in that podcast, I actually did a link to an observatory down in Mexico that came to the same conclusion that this observatory up in Ireland came out with. And I started reading a lot about other times that the planet has cooled, the little ice age during the Maunder Minimum. I also read about the little ice age that occurred during the actual Dark Ages around the middle of the 4th century, year 500, about 525, I think, was its peak. I don't have notes for the show with me. I was kind of doing this one off the cuff, so if I'm off by a date or something here, you know, I'll correct it in the show notes. But around the year 525, I believe, the planet plunged into the Dark Ages, and it was extremely cold, and there wasn't some type of catastrophic disaster that occurred to prompt that. And the same with the Maunder Minimum that occurred 1675, 1750, somewhere in there. Anyway, you can look at the show notes to get the exact dates on that. In any event, those are two times in the past 1500 years or so that the planet has experienced cooling periods that lasted half a century. Major cooling periods that impacted the planet. So today we're going to talk about what the effects of global cooling would be and what unique preparations you should be making, if any, to hedge against that threat, because I think we should be preparing for all threats. Before we do that, though, this weekend, we had the big announcement that everybody was waiting for from Barack Obama as to who his vice presidential nominee would be. I try to stay cognizant of the fact that I've started to pick up listeners in New Zealand, Australia, UK, and you may not care as much about the political scene here as people from the United States do. I'll keep this short, but I did want to bring up just a couple things about this. Number one, of course, the pick everyone should know by now if you turn the TV off for more than 2 seconds, which is Joe Biden, who is a career politician, only spent about 4 years in the private sector from Delaware. Now, my big issue here is I think Barack Obama just made a dumb pick. Biden, I don't think, brings a lot to the table for Barack Obama. This guy's very liberal. He's very much in the same mindset as Obama. He's a big anti-gun guy. He's from Delaware, which is not a state that's heavily contested. Doesn't have a lot of votes anyway, even if it were. And I think there were better picks for Barack Obama to make, so this really just shows the guy's judgment, I think. And I think the safe pick would have been Hillary Clinton. I think maybe Mrs. Obama put the high heels out in the kitchen, and that's why that didn't occur. I think that would have given him the best chance to win. And then there were some other pretty good picks out there. Catherine Harris or whatever her last name is, the governor of Kansas, she probably would have been a better pick. So the big issue here is that Mr. Biden has a history of shooting off his mouth and saying stupid things. In fact, saying stupid things that actually kind of really nuke any hope he had for his campaign this time for presidency about Barack Obama. And that was something the media ran away with, and it was stupid, and the guy got labeled for something he should have never got labeled for. And the fact that that was all total crap and trumped up by the press, it's kind of reinforced by the fact that Obama himself has now reached out and, you know, selected this man to be his VP nominee. That doesn't matter, though, folks. All that matters is if you have a person you're going to make an integral part of your campaign, like a VP nominee is, you don't want someone to have the history of saying dumb things and get himself in the hot water, and Barack has picked it. So I think the only excitement that we'll see come out of that pick is if and maybe slash when Joe Biden says something dumb and causes more problems for his campaign. I actually hope he doesn't do it. I don't want Barack Obama to be the next president, but I don't want him to be because of some stupid gaffe that the press runs away with and makes a mountain out of a molehill with. On the other side of things, we don't hear nothing from McCain. The Republican convention starts another week from now, so we're going to be blasted with the Democrats for a week. None of the Republicans will bat blast us for a week. Don't look for McCain to select his VP until right up to the end, right before the convention. This is the way that that Obama did. If you want my pick for who McCain should pick and who he will pick, with not my view politically or anything. I mean, my view politically, who should he pick would be Ron Paul. I think that would be political suicide. I don't think he would get elected if he did that. I certainly would reconsider my vote if he did, but I am the minority in my country, and I know that. The safe pick and the pick I think he's going to make will be Mitt Romney. Romney has a history of being a governor of a state, doing a very good job with the economy of that state, very well thought of. He's a lot younger than McCain. He looks like a guy that could step up and do the job tomorrow if he had to. He did well against McCain in the primaries. If it were not for Huckabee support, he probably would have beat McCain. So that's my pick. I think that's the safe pick and the smart pick. I think it's what they're going to do. If they don't, we'll talk about it when it happens. Anyway, let's get on with the main topic of today's show, global cooling and what you should do to prepare for it if it indeed is a credible threat. Now, I've done some research this morning, as much as I could during the time I had before I left the house. And let me tell you, I'm going to have to do more research into this because there is such a cult around the concept of global warming right now that very few scientists are even investigating this. And if they are, very few of them are publicly publishing the results. Because right now, if you start publishing results against global warming, it's kind of an immediate blackball. People have just gone out of vogue, and it's not, you know, no one wants to hear it. It's the stick your fingers in your ears and yell la, 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 la anytime somebody brings up anything counter to this global warming culture that's been created. And I think that the problem here is that we as a society have forgotten the golden rules when it comes to determining, you know, should we listen to somebody and who's going to benefit. And what I mean by that is when somebody tells you you have to sacrifice and they don't, okay? When the wealthy tell the poor, you must sacrifice, but we're not going to. When we have a guy like Al Gore saying we must save the planet and you can do it by purchasing carbon offsets, or you have a world government saying we have to do something about this and we need to tax the whole world to do it, you need to look at, well, who benefits from this? And the answer in this case is the power elites and the government. Because when taxes go up, they have more money to spend and they can build out their bureaucracies. So that is what this thing has really become all about, even if the threat were credible. Okay, let me devil's advocate here. Forget what I said about even if there was a credible global warming threat, everything that's been built to address it has been built with the concept of bigger government, more oppression, greater taxes, more control. All right? So that's why you have to immediately be skeptical about, if not the problem, at least the solution to the problem. So that's like the first thing that I think we've kind of thrown up a little. Because of that, we are being very stupid as a society, and then we're pulling the three monkeys when it comes to anything else that might be a threat. In other words, global cooling may be a bigger threat. Global cooling may be a more imminent threat. Okay? But everybody, all the scientific community, the political community, want to play the three monkeys, put their hands on their, you know, their eyes, their mouth, and their ears. They hear, speak, and see no evil unless it's profitable. And the reason is that if we're going to go into a global cooling cycle, one, all this oppressive legislation that's being heaped on us and restricting the growth of economies and plunging us deeper into a possible recession and redistributing the wealth from the middle class to the wealthy and the poor. All right. That's the problem I have with the redistribution of wealth. It doesn't redistribute the wealth from the wealthy to the poor. It takes the money from the middle class, gives a little bit of it to the poor, most of it to the wealthy. Right? So all of that's been heaped on us for no good reason if this is true. And then the other side of this is if it's true, if we're going to go into a global cooling cycle, there is nothing we can do to prevent it. You can't make a government program prevent the global cooling that's being predicted. Now, in the 70s and the 80s, folks, some of you younger people may not remember this, and this is why people my age and older are the biggest doubters about global warming. We were told global cooling was coming back then. There were people on the news almost every night with computer-generated models showing the ice sheets growing through Canada into the northern United States. I mean, we're talking about like a 2-degree cooling cycle like we're talking about here, a little ice age. These people were talking about the return of the real ice age. And they had computer models to support it, they had science to support it. But what they were saying is it's all the factories, it's all the smog, it's all the pollution blocking out the sunlight. That was the cause of it. And today we hear, well, that stuff causes global warming, not global cooling. So one, you've already played the card, that's why we're skeptical. But two, right, if global cooling is because of this phenomenon of solar activity, the global warming is as well, and that just takes this whole house of cards down. That's why I keep telling you, when it comes to green energy is great. We need to be building it in a cost-effective manner, implementing it as quick as possible to create self-sufficiency. Notice the government's not big on you owning solar panels, and you owning wind generation equipment, and you getting into a self-sufficient status where they can't tax you for it. Right? They can't tax you for the sunlight. Yeah, they can't tax you for the sunlight. They can't tax you for the wind. They want industry to build it. As long as industry builds it, they get their piece. All right? So when we look at like the solar cycle as being the cause of warming or cooling, now we can't use it to extract money from the people. So what do we do as people in response to this? Well, I want you to think as I go through some steps that I think you should take to address climate change, and see how they fit in with every other disaster or economy collapse or anything else that we can go into. And you'll notice that they're very similar to what you would do for anything else. Number one, store food. Store food. You know, get up to a 6-month supply, hopefully a year, eventually maybe 2 years. Store non-perishable food to bring your family through tough times, especially spikes in food prices, because if we have a major global cooling period, one of the effects is going to be drought. People don't realize that, you know, all that fresh water in those polar ice caps up there, when they grow, it comes out of the atmosphere, and there's less water in the atmosphere to create rain. So periods of drought, we'll have crop failures, we'll have additional long-term freezes. A lot of the citrus crops that are grown right at the edge of where citrus really is reliably grown, like Florida and California, could see citrus failures. Because if they have frost in the early part of the year, the orange trees, the lemon trees, the lime trees, the grapefruit trees, all that stuff won't survive. All right, so, you know, what the biggest risk is of global cooling, short term anyway, is either shortage of food supplies or just enough of a shortage to really spike the price of food, greater than that which we've seen from the biofuels idiocy so far. So storing food is a great idea. Continuing to develop your own capacity to produce food for yourself with gardening, I think, is a great idea. Now, the problem with that is, let's say you live in Minnesota. Well, you already have a pretty short growing season up there. So if we have a major global cooling event, you're going to be hit harder by it than I am in Texas. You might shorten my growing season a little bit, but it actually may make my agricultural efforts down here in Texas or Arkansas better. Because right now, even though we're almost into September, some of my crops are really having a hard time because of the heat. The few greens that I can actually get to grow in this heat are kind of wilted every day. My peppers look wilted by midday every day. Even my squash is somewhat wilted looking, and it's just too hot. Now, hopefully, it's going to cool a little bit in September, and these crops are going to do a little bit better. So actually, if there were a 2-degree drop centigrade, which is what's predicted by this little ice age they're calling it, my agricultural efforts might get a little bit better, except I might have a little more issue with water. I've got a 500-foot deep well in Arkansas. That's probably not likely to run out. That water's been flowing for 50 million years. So I would probably be able to water there, and as long as we don't have a complete collapse of the infrastructure, I've got water from the city in Arlington. So I've got water to make up for the lack of water. So the big issue for me is it actually might be better. For you guys in northern climates, though, it might be a really good time, and I think you should do this anyway, to think about putting in a greenhouse. Now, personally, for me, I want to put in some greenhouses up in Arkansas. Now, I want to do them in a way that not only are they suitable to grow my plants in the wintertime when it's really cold outside, but where it can be somewhat cooler inside them and diffuse sunlight so that I can grow plants inside them in the summer when it's too hot. And it also helps protect from deer and other animals that would come eat them. And trust me, folks, if I plant some really scrumptious crops up there in Arkansas, I'm going to have a deer issue. And I might have to put a few deer into the freezer to correct that problem, which, you know, hey, actually, that's a good thing. But I guess my point here is with climate change, you still need to think about producing your own food. And remember that every plant you plant pulls CO2 out of the atmosphere. So if you're still a believer in the global warming conspiracy, then, you know, grow plants to fix that. And this is, I guess, my point. If we have global warming and agriculture suffers, then growing your own food is a good idea. If we have global cooling and world agriculture suffers, then growing your own food is a good idea. If the United States economy completely collapses, growing your own food is a good idea. If we have an epidemic that limits your travel because of some type of a new influenza strain, growing your own food is a good idea. So I think I come back to small-scale agriculture and different methods of doing it, like building greenhouses, you know, and even things like squash that we think of as, you can't grow squash in a greenhouse. You can if you trellis it. Like there's small bush varieties of summer squash that can be grown in a greenhouse. And then like your traditional fall varieties, you grow those varieties, like you're not going to grow what's it called, Blue Hubbard, or very large pumpkins, but they're not the greatest food source anyway. But your smaller butternuts and acorns and things like that can be trellised inside a greenhouse and grown all year round. So these are just good things to do no matter what. But folks, if we're going to go into a global cooling cycle, then we're going to have to conserve water even more. So if you're doing container gardening in a greenhouse, right, then you have the ability to water directly and water less. Right. If you have global cooling, you're going to have shorter growing seasons, so the greenhouse extends your growing season. And it will enable you to produce things like greens that don't do well in the heat if we have increased warming. And let's look at this rationally. Even if we have true warming or cooling, there are still going to be very hot parts of the year and still very cold parts of the year in either scenario, in most climates. So you need to adapt to that anyway. So I think that's really important. I think another thing that we really need to think about doing, saving money, reducing your cost of living, preserve your money that you have, preserve your wealth. Now, that applies universally across the board. With climate change, specifically with global cooling, it will allow you, if food prices spike, and you've done the smart thing by storing some food, to still buy what you need without being completely, totally put out to the ends of the earth. I also think we need to think about conserving wealth, because one thing I can tell you is that either a massive increase in temperature or a massive decrease, in 1 degree centigrade, folks, right, or 2 degrees centigrade, 2 degrees centigrade is about 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit, right, is massive on a global scale. And neither one of those scenarios is good for the economy. Now, we already know, and I've beaten this up, so I won't get into it today, but the U.S. economy is propped up on very shaky stilts right now. And if one of those stilts crack, that's it. The whole thing's going to crash down. Now, if that happens to coincide, if they keep this thing pieced together, they keep pumping money in, if they raise taxes, they go ahead and accept the fact that they're raising interest, and they keep this thing held together in 2012, 2013, 2014, something like that, before it's ready to really give out. And it could happen. You know, I'm not saying we're going to have economic collapse tomorrow. I don't know when we're going to have it. All I know is that if we continue the way we are, we're going to have to. But let's say it's 2014, 2015 by the time it happens. Now, let's say the economy starts to really crash then, making what they're calling a recession now look like a joke. All right? Real problems. Peak oil starts to kick in. And then on top of that, we start to have crop shortages and major global cooling. Winters are longer and colder, and more people are cold in the winter and trying to buy fuel oil. Folks, this could get really nasty. All right? That is a big threat. So what we have to realize in that scenario is simply that it can push everything to a true breaking point. And, you know, when you look at the numbers, and you look at the solar activity, and you look at the cycle, you realize the last 50 years the sun has been very, very active, and before that it was quite inactive. And if you look back as far as we've recorded this stuff, it goes up and down, up and down. And the temperature goes up and down much more in sync with that than carbon levels. All right? So the threat itself is credible. That's one thing we have to stay cognizant of. And then the other side of this is just an understanding of an old saying that when it rains, it pours. Right, so I know I'm getting more and more international listeners here. So that's I think that's an American colloquialism, and I'll explain it. I mean, people say when it rains, it pours. Well, duh, of course it's raining, it's pouring, same thing. What it actually means is when something goes wrong, other things tend to go wrong. Or when you're down, that's when people kick you in the head. When a problem happens, other problems come. And it just seems that way. The saying is true because it seems that way. What really happens is, once you're in a situation where you're weak, all right, you've been weakened by an event, if nothing else happens, most people are stable enough to get past that event. But what happens is when you're weak from an event, and another event that's equally weakening hits at the same time, it compounds the problem, and it makes it worse. And because it makes it worse, you end up putting yourself into a position where you're a target for another problem. And that problem weakens you further. And then if something else happens, you know, outside of your control, or because you're so weak, now you're kind of down for the count. It's the old military thing, that no force in history has ever survived a successful three-prong attack. If you get your enemy surrounded and on three sides by well-equipped forces, you're gonna win the battle. And that's what happens with life, and that's what happens with world events, and that's what happens to economies. It's when things line up the right way, and three or four things hit at one time, it's crushing. And that could just be what this thing could be the catalyst for, is that three-pronged attack. Now, you know, other things that you can do, what would that be? Well, I keep saying this for other situations as well, but own land. You could definitely build a greenhouse if you have some land to build a greenhouse on. If you don't own land, it's going to be hard to build a greenhouse, unless you have like a rooftop unit where it's okay to build one up on the roof and you control the roof in like a condo or apartment situation or something like that. So owning land, I think, has always been a great idea. Land is wealth, folks. I want you to realize that what brought people to America while this nation was really being settled wasn't the Stars and Stripes. It wasn't people yearning to be free. It wasn't our system of government, because, you know, it sounds good. It makes a tear well up in some people's eyes, and it really makes a good story in the history books. But what they're not teaching our children in school is what really brought people to this country was land. In most other nations at the time, you could not own land. The land was owned by the nobility, the royalty, and the elite. And if you weren't born into a class of society that said you were supposed to own land, you couldn't own land. Or if you could, you owned very tiny pieces of land. Where in America, you could come over here and go out and lay claim to land, or buy it for next to nothing. And it was the dream of 40 to 80 acres that brought people here. The people that came and built our roads and mined our coal, they did it so they could save enough money to become farmers. The dream of America in its early years was that you could own land and farm. People understood at that time that the greatest form of wealth was land, and nothing's changed. So even in preparing for drastic climate change that may make agriculture more difficult, at least you have the opportunity. And in just about any situation, if you're smart, if you put down a little bit of initiative, you can figure out something that will grow. And we have the ability today with things like plastics to inexpensively produce things like greenhouses that those folks didn't. Now, I keep saying this as well. All you have to do to live really good today is to live the way those folks did, utilizing the resources and knowledge that we have that they didn't. We should be able to do so much better than the small homesteader from 150 years ago, because we have knowledge bases, we have opportunities, we have resources that he didn't have. We have cheap, readily available building supplies. We don't have to go out and hew logs into our own lumber, right? So, you know, these are all things that we can do to address this climate change issue. And if you think about it, they're all the same thing. Solar power, wind power, these are great things to do no matter what happens. So I don't care that if we're going to go into global cooling, Right. And this is a big difference between somebody that really gets it and the person that's bought into the alarmism, right? The people that have bought into this global warming conspiracy want solar and wind power to save the planet, right? Now, if global cooling is going to occur because of a decrease in solar activity, solar panels and wind power aren't going to save the planet. The planet's going to do what the planet's going to do. I still think they're important. I still want them. I still believe that if enough people start to utilize these things, the free market, what's left of it, will kick in, economy of scale will take over, and this stuff will become more affordable and more usable. I want solar power. I want wind power because it creates liberty for people, because it cuts the cord to the government, because it cuts the cord to Big Brother, because it takes away dependence. I don't want solar and wind produced by the same people that give us oil and gas. I want it produced by Joe American and Jim UK and Joe Australian, all right? I want the common man producing his own power because it's liberating, all right? And nothing has really been done by our government that claims to be so concerned about these things to make it more accessible or easier to do. They have these little tax subsidies and stuff. Tax subsidies help people that have enough income to pay taxes, right? How about you get out of the way with regulation? How about you tell all the power companies, if somebody produces 1 watt of power that they send back to you, you will pay them for it. And you do that everywhere. So the few states like Texas that are wise enough to do that. Well, what if we did that? What if we said if anybody anywhere within, you know, normal environmental means wants to set up a way to generate electricity, you gotta buy it. You gotta buy it. You ain't got no choice. You say you're short on power, you're saying we're at risk of brownouts, you're saying all that you really want people to conserve power, blah, blah, blah. Then when somebody produces power, buddy, you pay market rate for it. You're buying it. Right? And we create all these little power stations all over the place in private hands. Right? Why don't we do that? Well, because it doesn't help the government. It doesn't increase control. It doesn't increase legislation. It doesn't increase taxes. It increases freedom and liberty. That's what I'm telling you, folks. No matter what the threat is, creating individual and freedom and liberty in your life, creating more freedom from the system. When people say, should I do this or should I do that? That's always my test. Will it increase your individual liberty? Will it increase your individual freedom? Will it decrease your dependence on others? All right? That's why I'm a big proponent of the Second Amendment, right to keep and bear arms. Right? The reason I think that you should be properly trained on how to use a gun and how to keep one in your own home and know how to deploy it properly is it reduces your dependence. You don't have to sit there and cower and wait for a cop to come in a few minutes when you need them in a few seconds. Not a knock on the police folks. I have a law enforcement officer in my family. I have immense respect for him and the crap that he goes through out there. But I know if he's 2 blocks away, which I'd be lucky if he was, somebody's robbing my house and he gets the call to come, he has to drive those 2 blocks. He doesn't have a magical police department teleportation machine to hand up, wow, here, I'm here. Here's the bad guy. Lay down. No. He can't be there that fast. All right? You know, the best thing I can do is dial 911 and leave the phone off the hook. Because I'm talking, I'm more likely to let the assailant know where I'm at. And I know the police are going to come if I do that. All right? And get myself into a defensive position. And if I need to take the guy out before they get there, I take him out. Individual liberty, less dependence. Growing your own food. Don't have to go to the supermarket for everything I consume. Greater independence, greater personal liberty. And what I don't think a lot of people realize, and I know there are some people that are big environmentalists that listen to this show, because I've gotten emails from you guys, they've always been great emails, take no exception with anything you have to say. What many people do not realize is that the environmentalist is for liberty. They just don't realize it. They're looking for the government to provide the solution, right? They want the government to do something. The government to do something. Folks, every time the government does something, they screw it up. That's why this climate change issue has been so embraced, because they can screw it up to God's own end, and they can use any result to their advantage. Let me explain that. We enact all these Kyoto Accords and all this restriction, and we throw our economy into the toilet. While that's happening, nothing happens to the climate. It stays level. It doesn't get any warmer at all. It stays perfect. The cult of personality of global warming will come out and say, it's working. We've stopped it. We're only holding it in check, though. We have to be careful. If we back off at all, the climate could continue to go up. If it continues to go up, we're not doing enough. We have to do more. We have to sacrifice more. We have to give more. And ladies and gentlemen, you have to pay more carbon tax. Okay? Think about that. All right, now, what if the temperature goes down? It's working, right? We're doing the right things. We need to keep doing them because if we let off, we've learned the lesson now. So they set up a situation for themselves where they can continuously harvest more and more money and take away more and more control no matter what happens. That's why it's the perfect solution for them. But I'm telling you right now, if we form this link to solar activity, it brings the whole house of cards down. So look for this thing to be fought. Look for everybody that comes out with credible evidence that this is going to occur to be called crackpots. Look for, even if it happens, for their science to be called pseudoscience and say it's just it's coincidental and on and on and on. And it's something, you know, that's what you're going to hear. So what I'm telling you today, my big lesson for you today, is, you know, prepare for anything that could happen, because anything could happen. We just don't know what it's going to be. We have one major volcanic eruption somewhere in the world that doesn't directly affect you that can have a 1 to 2 to 3 year major impact on global temperatures in the negative, pushing them down even colder than this little ice age. We get the little ice age and that at the same time. We could be in for some real cold winters, right? But the things you do to prepare for them are the same things you do to prepare for, you know, extreme blistering heat, the same things you do to prepare for flooding. You create a situation for yourself where you control your own destiny, where you preserve, protect, and build your wealth, where you have the ability to produce your own food, you seek your own personal energy independence as much as you can, you own land, and you reduce debt. So that's always going to be the solution. Any show that I have, any topic that I discuss, I might talk about unique, specific things that you do for that scenario, but it's always going to be about building, producing, and increasing your own personal liberty. And there's a very simple reason that that's the case. What's the topic of this show? What is the main philosophy of this show? Helping you live the life you want to live if times get tough, or even if they don't. That is all about extending your own personal freedom and your own personal liberty, no matter what the government does, because as oppressive as the government can become, short of the day we end up in a situation like Nazi Germany, short of that, there is still the ability for the individual to create their own sphere of personal liberty. So that's what you need to work on. That's what you need to do. I hope you continue to do so. I look forward to hearing from you folks about what you're doing to increase your own personal liberty, increase your own personal independence. So please, you know, send emails in, comment on the blog, let me know. Continue to suggest show topics. Again, if you've suggested a topic and you haven't heard it yet, it's probably in queue, and I'm probably doing research to make sure I do the topic justice and I do a good show on it. And, you know, that's the thing I'm going to commit to you. I'm never going to just get a suggestion for a show, have no knowledge about it, whatever, and try to wing it. So if you've been a suggestion, it hasn't happened, don't think it's not coming. And then the other thing is make sure you join our listener appreciation contest. We have a listener appreciation contest running. We had 1,000 listeners on the FeeBurner stats. I'm giving away a free iPod Nano. We're about to hit 500. I'm going to give away 5 copies of one of my books when that happens, and those folks are going to come out of the contest. So help other people learn about the show. And remember, here at the Survival Podcast, as always, we're here to help you live a better life if times get tough, or even if they don't. I'm Jack Spirko. Please tune in tomorrow for another edition of the Survival Podcast.
You can scream, and you can holler. It really doesn't matter, 'cause it all gets spent.